This is Roger Bennett of Men in Blazers.
Hey, this is Alexi Lawless.
You're listening to the Mouths of the South podcast.
Mouths of the South podcast, right here on Dirty South Soccer.
Rock on.
Eat it up.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? Another edition of the Mouths of the South podcast, ripe and ready for your listening pleasure. Sam Franco here, and introducing for the first time, Jason Longshore, a fellow Dirty South soccer writer and chief development officer of Soccer in the Streets here in Atlanta. Gentlemen, a sad and somber day, especially the past couple days, in regards to the Atlanta Silverbacks as they suspend operations indefinitely. Not necessarily the final nail in the coffin, but the hammer is definitely up and ready to pound it in, I guess. Sam, initial reactions.
Well, it stinks, obviously, man. Yeah, the history of soccer in Atlanta has been a very up and down one, obviously going back to the Chiefs and the old NASL days. And I still remember going to Atlanta Ruckus soccer camps back in the day. So, you know, it definitely stinks to lose yet another team. With Atlanta United coming down the pike, it doesn't sting as bad, but you know, it obviously stinks, man. You know, there's cities that and fans of teams that always have to go through stuff like this. I mean, right now, current events in the news, look at St. Louis losing the St. Louis Rams. I mean, you feel for them, and it's obviously on a smaller scale, but fans of the Silverbacks and people that have been going to those games for years and you know, the ultra groups and their fan groups and even the Terminus Legion, which, you know, obviously started as a Silverbacks or cheering for the Silverbacks because that was really the only show in town. So it stinks, man. It stinks for the fans of this team to lose it because that's something they've devoted a small chunk of their life to, and now it's just not there anymore.
And Jason, that's why we've brought you on, Jason Longshore. That's why we brought you on because you're closest, or at least I think out of all of us at Dirty South Soccer, you're one of the closest to the organization. What's the conversation been like specifically in the Atlanta soccer community with the supporters groups and the people directly connected and involved with Silverbacks?
It's been tough because, I mean, it's not exactly a surprise. The writing had been on the wall. Honestly, I mean, the team folded in 2008 and came back to fill out that last spot in the NASL when it started up. And that was the partnership with Traffic Sports and all of that. And the team was always on shaky ground ever since it came back. You just didn't have the local ownership that wanted to invest in the team at the right type of level. And the NASL has grown a lot in the last couple of years. You look at the Cosmos coming in, you look at teams like Indy 11 drawing 10,000 people a game, and the investment that those owners are putting into their teams, you couldn't match it. So you couldn't compete, and it was always a year-to-year type of thing. So it's sad. I really hate it for the fans. I hate it for the kids that the Silverbacks was their first team, but it was kind of inevitable.
I think what most me as someone who went to a few Silverbacks games and few as in maybe one or two over the past, you know, 4 years or so, the reputation they had was more that they were just a mishandled franchise, that they didn't have the best sort of management to, you know, help them excel in the Atlanta community.
And that was kind of a long-standing preconception. And it's a shame for the group that was in the front office at the end, because they did an amazing job with pretty much no resources, to be honest. I mean, they had the lowest budget in the league. Last year, the league's other teams funded the team. And I mean, for example, I know the marketing department was one full-time employee and four interns. So, and they did an amazing job with what they had, but you had limited resources. So it didn't look like that was the case, but that was really the case. the last group with Andy Smith as the president and Evan Mitz as the VP did a great job, and I wish they had been here sooner because I think things could have been different. But what you said about, you know, being mismanaged, that was definitely the thought in the community in the first run of the Silverbacks up through 2008. That was pretty much the running thing. There was a bad attempt at a merger between some youth soccer clubs that left a bad taste in people's mouths, and that just kind of kept on going. And the current group that did their best was always running uphill against that.
Jason, I have a question, just kind of in general on the Silverbacks. You know, you're looking at what you were saying there with only having like one full-time marketing employee and not necessarily putting your resources in the best spots. What was the – and this is just coming from someone like Eric, who has been to one or two Silverbacks games over the last couple of years and you know, just kind of a fan in passing just by association that Atlanta's on the front of their name. But the Eric Winalda thing always struck me as kind of odd just in general. What was kind of the whole story with that? It just seemed kind of weird. A guy that wasn't really a coach jumps into coaching, and then it didn't work out, so now he's back on TV.
It was an interesting situation. I wasn't around at the beginning of it because you have to go back on the timeline. He came in middle of 2012 as the technical director and the interim coach, and then they hired Brian Haynes at the end of 2012. He coached the team through 2013, and then Winalda came back as a coach and technical director in 2014. So it was unique. I think it was always going to be tough. I mean, when you have a technical director and part-time head coach who's on the other side of the continent, it's a challenge. There was a lot of really good things that came of it, though. You look at guys like Jaime Chavez, who to me is an MLS level player. I think he's shown a ton playing here. He would have never been noticed without Winalda. Same with a Junior Burgos, same with the Mendez twins. There's so many players who have come through that team that Winalda put him to that level. So he helped, and that's where the lack of resources, like you mentioned, saying maybe that they weren't using resources in the correct way. I don't even think it was that. It was just not having the resources, and having a guy with the soccer IQ and scouting mind and eye of Winalda helped overcome that, because he was able to find some diamonds in the rough that, you know, were relatively inexpensive when you compare salaries across the league, but the production was very good. So that's why you had a competitive team in 13 who won the spring season and lost in the Soccer Bowl final. And in 14 with the Open Cup run, you had a team that could compete on a lower budget.
Is there anything else that kind of may have caused the, cause like we were talking off air about how up until kind of the last minute, it seemed as if though they were going to play in 2016. You know, what? It's not a shock in the sense that they would depart, I guess, but especially with Atlanta United coming in. But at the same time, up until the last minute, we were hearing kind of good news.
Yeah, the timing was difficult, and I think there were a lot of issues at the NASL level on that, because, you know, last year the rumored amount is that each NASL franchise put in $250,000 to run the Silverbacks. A lot of teams can handle that. Not all could. And it was definitely a back and forth at league meetings about, are we going to do it? Or are we not going to do it? They were looking for local ownership the whole time. I know there were some leads at different points. I don't know where those conversations went, or, you know, if it just wasn't a right fit. I think the San Antonio situation kind of held things well, because you had another NASL team that the stadium was bought by the city and the county, and then the rights were given to the San Antonio Spurs, who had the rights to a USL team. So that pushed the Scorpions out of the facility, and that future's up in the air. So I think they waited as long as they possibly could, but there just wasn't the will within the league to fund it again for another year, either because the league didn't want to, you know, pay that, or they felt like it wasn't going to get them anything in the long run, that it was going to fail eventually.
You mentioned on Soccer Morning, because I think a lot of the blame coming from the real, like, the hardcore supporters, to them it lies on, you know, Atlanta United. And you said on Soccer Morning with Jason Davis, if you aren't listening to Soccer Morning, or if you didn't hear it yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday on Tuesday. If you didn't hear it, go back. He's got a podcast, Soccer Morning, with Jason Davis. You'll be over here, Jason Longshore, with him. And one of the things you said, which I thought was, yeah, that's pretty much it. If you think that this is the fault of Atlanta United, you're kind of missing the bigger picture in that, you know, these problems with the franchise were well established long before Atlanta United even came around.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that if you haven't been involved in the Atlanta soccer scene, or you know, you're looking at it from the outside, you have to go back to the timeline. And the team went on hiatus/folded after the 2008 USL First Division season. They didn't play for 2 years. And then they came back, and they were part owned and funded by Traffic Sports. And that was to fill out the North American Soccer League and hit the minimum number of teams. So it was always kind of a, you know, they were always being propped up. And this was well before Atlanta United was announced. It had nothing to do with it. Did the landscape change once it was announced? Definitely. Did it make it a harder road? Yeah, absolutely. But it didn't lead to this. The issues and the lack of resources and the lack of a local owner were always there. This just made it a more difficult road to success with Atlanta United coming into play in 2017.
Kurt Bronsroth, founder of Westside 109, the oldest supporters group for the Atlanta Silverbacks. He'll join us next. Mouths of the South podcast. Stay tuned. If you want to get in touch with the Mouths of the South podcast, hit us up on Twitter, at MOTS Podcast. You can yell at us individually at EricQuintana47, at JasonIsASmith, and at SamJFranco. We also have a new podcast email for you to utilize for every time we say Boca Juniors instead of Boca Negra, or say the MLS. All hate mail should go to MOTSPodcast@gmail.com. That's MOTSPodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you also check out DirtySouthSoccer.com for all the latest on Atlanta United and Georgia Soccer. Back on the Mouths of the South podcast, we are joined by Kurt Bronsroth, founder of Westside 109, the oldest supporters group for the Atlanta Silverbacks. And Kurt, it must be a kind of a sad and somber day for the last couple of days for you and for your supporters. Tell us what the kind of conversation's been.
Well, I mean, you summed it up very nicely, sad and somber. It's not unexpected. There was talk about it over the last season. But, you know, still everybody had hope that something could be worked out. I know twice in the past the team came close to, you know, this kind of situation, and always managed to avoid it, but I don't know, this time maybe they couldn't. So here you go.
Yeah. Kurt, did you feel like 2015 was kind of a different season? Was there a different vibe because of, I know last year, how close it came to folding at that point before the league took it over? Was there a different feeling throughout the year, or was there always kind of that thought that it would work itself out?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, after 2007, I mean, when the team came back in 2009, I think everybody understood it was kind of a roll of the dice here, you know, whether it would work or not. So, so really, I think it's just been a continuous vibe of each year that there was games, you would just be grateful that there was something there, you know, starting around there, and hung on. But now, you know, they've ceased operations again. So yeah, it's very disappointing, but it's, again, not unexpected.
Has the group talked about what it would do if last season was the last season of the Silverbacks? Are there any plans to continue in any way?
Well, I mean, personally, okay, first of all, let me just say, we're very loosely organized. You know, I only really speak for myself. I don't have any official, press release or anything like that. But I'm still hoping that the NPSL side will continue operation in some form or fashion. And I don't think that's impossible. It must happen. So obviously that's a good starting point right there. The NPSL, formerly reserve team, now I guess it would be the main team, continue to play. Well, that gives me something to go to, and I would imagine I would not be alone. I would see quite a few friends at those games. That's the first event. And then, of course, you know, we've been together. I've been coming to games since, 1996. And, you know, over all those years, you start to make friends. And I'm sure those friendships will continue. So, you know, whether it's at a game or not, where, yeah, the group is going to continue to meet and socialize with each other. But exactly what, you know, how they're going to go about that, I couldn't tell you. We already like get together, you know, in the off season and visit in various ways, and I guarantee you that's going to keep going. So,
Kurt, just based off what I've seen on, you know, different social network and social media outlets, it seems like the strongest supporters or the strongest, you know, fans of the Silverbacks more than partially laid the blame on Atlanta United's feet. Is that partially the outlook from the supporters groups, or do you think that's just kind of a natural reaction from a bigger team happen to reside in a city where a local smaller team is already residing?
You know, I don't want to play the blame game. You know, I mean, like I said, it certainly didn't help, you know, to have an MLS team arriving. I mean, in the end of the day, somebody's got to pay for all this, for the players and everything. And, I can imagine that it factored in to the people, like say, paying the league was paying for the team. I imagine it factored in to their decision making, you know. But that would be a real good question for them, I guess, if you could ever ask them that, you know. And I'm sure that, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they would say, but you know, again, I don't want to play the blame game on this one. So yeah, I was gonna let it go, let that one fly by.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think all of us who've been around Atlanta soccer for a while know that there's not a single thing or person or anything to blame. There's a lot of different things that have happened over the run of this franchise. I mean, Kurt and I were there with the Ruckus back in those days, and Kurt started the first supporters group in Atlanta soccer, at least the modern era, with the Blue Army back in those days, and I mean, I worked for the team and I quit, and then the league took the team over and finished out the season. The Silverbacks came in. So this had happened before, and it's sad and it's frustrating.
Well, what's kind of the general attitude on the Atlanta United from your group? And I guess from you, since we're talking to, I know that a lot of times when these situations happen where a bigger league or whatever comes in to a town where, you know, they've already got a team and something like this happens and it can cause some bitterness and stuff. So what's your kind of just, I guess, feelings on the whole Atlanta United thing, maybe before the Silverbacks, I guess, ended and now?
Well, I'm only going to speak for myself. I'm not mad at anybody, but I'm a little disappointed that, let me put it to you this way. Portland had no trouble transitioning their team to MLS. Seattle didn't have any trouble. And you can go down the line. How many cities have managed to pull this off? And I didn't even get any inkling that there was any kind of serious discussion going on, you know, in Atlanta. So that's a little disappointing to me because, honestly, just speaking for myself, I can't get excited about Atlanta United. I mean, it's going to have a beautiful stadium. It's going to probably have a very good team. But, I mean, it's like we already had a culture started. We already had some tradition started. We had some stuff going on and some dedicated fans. And, you know, I'm sure they had their reasons, but it's hard for me to get – I can't start over again. I've been, what, 96? Is that 20 years ago? You know, I can't start over again with a whole new team just because it's bigger, you know, and has a nicer stadium and all. I can't. So as long as there's an NPSL side, I'm going to continue to follow the Silverbacks. And if that doesn't happen, I'm not sure what I'll do, but it's going to be real hard for me to get excited about Atlanta United. Now, I'm mad at them or bitter. No, I'm not mad. They're going to do what they're going to do. But, you know, yeah, you're not going to see me drumming at Atlanta United games. I can safely say that.
Now, Jason, you might know a little bit about this too. This doesn't officially mean that the Silverbacks are dead forever. What are the chances and what has to happen in order for, I guess, the Silverbacks to revive themselves?
There's so many scenarios as to how that could look. And it's probably way too early to even try to guess. My understanding would be that the league retains the ownership rights to an NASL team in Atlanta. And if they choose to sell that and have somebody run it, then that's definitely a possibility. I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, why didn't the Silverbacks move to USL and go that route? You have to go back to the 2008 time when the team went on hiatus the first time, and there was a lot of bad blood between the Silverbacks ownership and the USL at the time, because the Silverbacks were kind of the first domino that led to the North American Soccer League happening. There were a group of owners at USL who wanted to do more and be more independent, and there was a group who wanted to be like USL is. So there was a battle. You had a bunch of teams break away, and the Silverbacks were part of that. So I don't know if there's ever a route for the Silverbacks ownership, Boris Jerkunico, who owns the park and owns the name. I don't know if there's ever a way they would go back to USL. I guess you can really never say never, but I'd be pretty surprised if that happened. Could there be a USL or NASL team in Atlanta that's not called Silverbacks? Yeah, that's definitely a possibility too. I think it's anything could happen at this point.
The only thing I can say is I'm really hoping that there's an NPSL side, at least for the upcoming year or the next couple of years, because I would definitely show up to those games, and I don't think I'd be alone. I really feel very confident there'd be others there with me. So, you know, it'd be fun, and it would carry on to some kind of tradition, and you never know. We might be able to do something in the U.S. Open Cup with that team. That'd be a lot of fun. So there you go. There's hoping.
Kurt. Yeah, hey, one thing before we go. Let's end it on a happier note. Kurt, what's some of your favorite memories from the team, or even going back to the Ruckus days of being in the stands supporting that team?
Oh, wow, you had to drop that one on me. Let me see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 2007, one of the first ones that pops into my mind is 2007, and Silverbacks are in the playoffs and are doing well. And I'm in Decatur over at Twain's, and we're watching the game, you know, on TV. Well, they're playing Portland. They're playing Portland. And,
yeah, that was the
watching
semifinal.
It on TV. Yeah, and I counted. I forgot the exact number, but it was around 80 people were there. And, I mean, that was, to me, surprising at the time. You know, 80 people showed up to a watch party for the Silverbacks, you know, at a sports bar. And and when we scored that winning goal, the place just exploded. And that was a great moment. Obviously, winning the spring championship, you know, a few years back, that was a great moment. I remember one day where Iggy Malika, this is going way back, scored like, God, I want to say it was like 5 goals in one game. It was some insane number. And he does a hop move, and he starts counting on his fingers, you know, all the goals he scored. You know, that was a great moment. There's a bunch of trips to Charleston we used to take. And there's the Southern Derby Cup. I don't know if you guys know anything about Southern Derby. But a couple of us started the Southern Derby. It was one of the first – I think it was the first fan cup. I mean, it's before Cascadia. It's before any of them.
Yeah, it was before the Cascadia Cup got going.
Yeah, hoisting the Southern Derby Cup and presenting it. There was one time at halftime they let me present the Southern Derby Cup to the Silverbacks because they had won it. And by the way, it's still – the Atlanta Silverbacks name is still carved on the side of that cup. That was something I did. I had it engraved, and we just made – I was on the original committee – that created the cup, and every time the Silverbacks won, they shipped it to me, and I would have the team engraved on the side, and when we, of course, lost, I had to ship it off to the next winner. But, yeah, those were great moments. And then, of course, I could go on and on about, you know, the friends and stuff I've met. I don't know, and some of the players, the way they've treated us, and the way, you know, coming over to our tailgates and saying hello. Little things like that. I don't know, Tony McManus comes to mind, David Hayes, Tiger Fitzpatrick, of course, Iggy, you've already mentioned him. Joe Barton, who's a, he's kind of a cult figure in our group, and I could go on and on. So I've had a lot of good memories, and those will always be with me. And,
what about the what about the whole Cinderella story of Poku?
Yeah, Poku's a good story. Matt Kanji, don't forget him if you want to talk about Cinderella stories. Yeah, we've had a number of those. Like I say, you know, those are all good memories too. Yeah, I remember Matt Kanji coming over. We were having a tailgate. Matt Kanji just walks up to us and says, "Hey, thanks for supporting us, you know, a tailgate and stuff." And then, you know, a few years later, I'm watching him win the MLS Cup with Colorado. You know, so that was a, you know, that was a good memory. Yeah, it's a great team. There's a lot of history. I hate to see it. I hate to see the city throw it away. You know, I'm trying to stay positive here, but, you know, it's, I think it's an opportunity missed by Atlanta United. I really do.
Kurt Bronsroth, founder of Westside 109. Again, it's sad to say that we're speaking under these circumstances, but, you know, at least we have the good memories.
All right. You guys take care.
Thanks, Kurt.
Woo. Yeah. That was rough. You devote your life and a good chunk of your life to something like that and for it to get just ripped away from you. Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel for him. I can feel his pain.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that's why I recommended talking to Westside, and I'm glad it was Kurt who was able to join us, because he's been there, you know, longer than pretty much anybody. There's a few others in different groups who've been around probably since the beginning of the ruckus. That would really be the beginning of this franchise, but it's tough. And I understand the ones who don't want to follow on and support Atlanta United, but it's a shame. It's just a shame that that's how it's going to go down.
It's just so crazy to think from, you know, the ruckus. They used to play at Adams Stadium, man. Like,
yep.
And now, you know, the Silverbacks had a very nice park, you know, and now we're going to have soccer in Atlanta at a giant starship that's so, you know, I mean, hey, it's come a long way.
The evolution of it, yeah. I mean, even if you go back before the ruckus at Adams Stadium, you had – games in the USL, like at high schools and all over the place. And then, you know, the first year of the ruckus, that was my first pro team. I'd been a fan since I was a kid, but I hadn't had a team to go watch. And I'll never forget the first ruckus game, and, you know, getting off I-2 or I-85 at the North Druid Hills exit, and it was backed up because people were trying to get in. And it was a huge deal. And you had guys like John Doyle and Lennon Steenkamp, and they went to the final that year and lost to Seattle. That was great. And then the next year, the ownership pulled out midseason, and you had this whole cycle of the league having to come in and run the team and keep it around. And then a new owner coming in and lasting another year or two and unfolding. I mean, the Silverbacks run from 99 to 2008 was the longest consecutive run for an Atlanta soccer team ever. You know, the Chiefs didn't last that long in, from their whole run. They had their longest run was 67 to 72. So it sucks that that's how it's going to end, but there's so many different factors that have caused it.
Yeah, no, definitely sad. Again, a sad day for Atlanta. Sad couple days, sad couple weeks, I'm sure, for most people, especially the Atlanta Silverbacks faithful. And again, it's sad that we have to talk under these circumstances, but you know, these are just, I guess, some of the things that happen in soccer, and especially now that, because again, it's not a surprise that a team would go under because of financial troubles, or trying to find an owner, especially in a league like NASL. But
the good thing is that it doesn't happen as often as it used to. I mean,
right
from the late 90s when the Silverbacks started and when the ruckus were ending and the USL became the top second division league, you went from 24 teams in 1997 to about 10 or 12 at the end of the USL first division. And most of those teams just disappeared. They just went away. They didn't drop down a level. They didn't, you know, reform in something else. They just went out of business. And that's not happening as often as it used to. The NASL has really stabilized a lot of things at the second division level. They're growing now. They've added some new teams. The USL is growing and adding some new teams and locations. You're seeing more teams added than going out of business. So I'm glad this isn't a regular thing in American soccer anymore, but it's tough when it does happen.
I was gonna say, it just happened to be a thing that's going to happen to Atlanta, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's a new landscape. It's a new Atlanta soccer is absolutely different than it was before Atlanta United was announced. And it's going to be a very different thing for a lot of people.
What I'm hoping, honestly, is that the Atlanta United community fan base, you know, just kind of call for a either USL team or some kind of other, or, you know, bring back the Silverbacks. And, you know, someone steps up, or somehow it happens to where a Silverbacks team or, you know, USL team just crop up somewhere in the, you know, in the Metro Atlanta area.
Well, you've seen MLS do it different ways. I mean, you've seen the LA Galaxy 2 model that a lot of teams have done, where they have a second team that's absolutely completely in-house. You've seen some that I think like Kansas City has the Swope Park Rangers, which is separate and has its own identity. It's separate from Sporting KC. And then Houston has their USL team. Their affiliate is Rio Grande Valley, which is further away from Houston, but and owned separately, but run under the same technical staff. So there's a lot of different ways to make it work. I mean, could a USL team that is an affiliate or a developmental team for Atlanta United work at Silverbacks Park or Kennesaw or Gwinnett? Yeah, it definitely could.
And I'm honestly, I'm kind of hoping that's the case, because I know, you know, selfishly, I want to see a U.S. Open Cup game in Atlanta somehow.
Yeah, no, it'll happen with Atlanta United, for sure. I mean, they'll host U.S. Open Cup games. I wonder if they'll do the model of, like, D.C. United, for example. They play their early round games against amateur lower division teams at the Maryland Sportsplex, which is like a Silverbacks Park type of facility. I wonder if Atlanta United would do that for their early round games and then host the later games at the stadium. Seattle does that too. They play at Starfire for their early round games.
Have you heard anything in regards to the future of the actual park?
No. I mean, as a business, it does well. They have 7v7 leagues. They rent it for 11v11 leagues. They do other special events. But as a park, as a sporting complex, it does really well. So I wouldn't expect that would change.
Because my other contention was that maybe Arthur Blank bought the park and, you know, decided to do something with that, but that is some insight that I do not have as of right now.
Yeah, not sure on that one. Maybe things are different if I win that Powerball tonight. But
yeah, right. No kidding. Hopefully, when people are listening to this either tonight or in the future, you'll have already won. They'll already know of your winnings.
Yeah. That would be great. I could definitely handle that.
Well, that is a perfect place to wrap it up. Jason and Sam, thanks for, as always, coming on. Check out Sam at Sam J. Franco on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Mouths of the South Podcast, MOTS Podcast, on Facebook. Jason, throw out your Twitter handle real quick.
Yeah, personally, I'm on Twitter at Longshoe, and also check out Soccer in the Streets on Twitter at Soccer Streets.
And Jason, also a writer for us at Dirty South Soccer, so make sure you check out some of his stuff. And until next time, guys, it's a pleasure, and we'll see you later.